quietest spot in the world, the whole valley.
Yeah.
Quiet,
yeah.
The Square Inch Project.
One square inch of silence, yeah.
Tell us about the project, that he sees this, that spot, as being the quietest square inch.
Yeah, Gordon's an acoustic ecologist. He records natural sounds, and he is very keyed into natural sounds and silence, and the silence to hear them. And as he's worked around the world, he kept coming back to his home forest and came to the realization that this remote little spot in the upper Hoh Valley may be one of the most quietest areas in the world. So started doing some recordings there and, you know, measuring local sound. And in order to dramatize the idea of quiet lands and listening to natural sounds and the importance of that, not only for humans, but for all the species that have to survive by listening for prey, listening for predators, hearing one another's mating territorial calls, being keen to changes in wind and weather. So Gordon established that little site in One Square Inch of Silence, and has it's a cool idea, and it's really dramatized that whole issue of natural sound preservation for him.
And then when the Navy hears about it, they think this is a good place to do jet exercises.
I don't know if the Navy ever heard about it, but they decided that Whidbey Island was going to be the home base, West Coast home base, for all the new Growler jets, or a whole lot of the new Growler jets. These really loud, fast, scary machines, war machines. And they decided that the logging roads out in Olympic National Forest, west of Olympic National Park, would be where they could put some transmitter trucks and send up radio signals that the pilots could then key in on and simulate, you know, their bombing. And there was a huge wave of protest for that. Thousands of people commented on that. I think maybe way off on this, but I think it's in the neighborhood of 3,000 people commented on that permit process. Everybody seemed to hear it, but the politicians and the Navy. And they went ahead with it, and it's being challenged now by Forest Service employees for environmental ethics out of Eugene. Court challenge, and we'll see where it goes.
When we said more growlers, we were talking about beer. They didn't get that.
They didn't get that part.
There is a part art project, part environmental project in the Olympic Sculpture Park in Seattle called the Newcomb Vivarium. It's a nurse lock taken from the Green River that was cut, and the roof then was put on after this nurse lock was loaded into this space, a giant terrarium, if you will.
Yeah, I've seen it.
It's a pretty incredible thing to think that this artist, Mark Dion, when thinking about what Seattle would be like, and I think he's from Massachusetts and lives in Pennsylvania, but he thought, I can't recreate salmon ladders here in this spot, but I can put a nurse lock here, and he did, and it's pretty incredible. And I went there for like 5 weeks in a row. And
oh, you did? Good.
And wrote about it, and have a poem about it. Mm-hmm. But nurse logs are all over this park and are really responsible for how this park's ecology is maintained.
Yeah, the temperate rainforests. Yeah, the ground is just too wet and mossy and full of growth for tree seedlings to really have much of a chance. And so it's on the upraised substrate of fallen logs, Douglas firs and other species, that seedlings get a foothold. And then, of course, that foothold has to eventually make it down into the ground of the forest.
And it does.
And so you see that then in these stilted trees that look like they're on long legs, or columns of colonnades of trees that are growing in a straight line, and you can kind of look in the roots and imagine the nurse log that they all got their start on. It's pretty cool, exciting.
Fantastic.
One of the characteristics of the temperate rainforest.
One of the great joys of going to the Olympics is seeing Roosevelt elk. They're also important for how this park got to be a park.
It did. Yeah.
And tell us about that.
Yeah, so it was turn of the century. You know, I talk about in the book how by the end of the 19th century, Olympic had survived this onslaught of railroad building, mining, and logging to some degree. But one of the ways it almost didn't was the elk slaughter. The elk were first killed for the commercial meat trade for Victoria, then to supply food for the logging camps, and then when the numbers were really low, the benevolent protective order of the elks decided that they like to have elk teeth for their watch fobs, and elk were being slaughtered for that. And so it was around about that point, 1909, that Theodore Roosevelt stepped in and created a national monument, a Mount Olympus National Monument, based on some legislation that had occurred a little earlier, to set aside some area to protect the elk from going extinct. Possible population of the elk at that time on the Olympics might have been well below 1,000. And so stepping in at the time when he did enabled that original population of elk to survive and not get wiped out as it undoubtedly would have, you know, as the wolves were soon after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that was the first protected, that was the, you know, there was an Olympic Forest Preserve, there was an Olympic National Forest, but the monument was the first protected area where wildlife was protected from hunting, where the forests were protected from logging, and no mining was allowed, and no commercial development.
Theodore Roosevelt, the last Republican conservative who actually conserved something.
Well, I would have to include Dan Evans in that Republican conservative who actually conserved something, particularly here in the Olympics. Dan was instrumental in both Shy, Point of the Arches, Lake Ozette, the Forest Service Wilderness Areas, the Olympic National Park Wilderness Area, and a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, let the record reflect that.
Let the record show.
And pretty amazing animals, the Roosevelt elk.
Oh, yeah, magnificent animals. Yeah.
Blue Leaf Huckleberry, the tastiest of all huckleberries anywhere, ever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Just like...
Delicioso.
Are we going to see wolves?
You know, it's interesting. I always figured this is one of my lifetime goals, to see wolves back in the Olympics. It gets so close. The late 90s, Congressman Dix, in fact, became very interested in wolf reintroduction here. He and the Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, hosted a big conference, brought all the wolf biologists in. This was in the aftermath of the wolf reintroduction in Yellowstone and central Idaho, the early success of that. Had a big conference out at Olympic Park Institute on Lake Crescent. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service published a feasibility study that showed it was eminently feasible for wolves to be here, that there was abundant game, that there would be little conflict with surrounding, you know, livestock growers, that it would be a great benefit to the elk and to the general ecology of the area. And then that kind of just fizzled out. The next big effort was the Washington State Wolf Recovery Plan, because wolves, from the successful reintroduction in Idaho, Rockies in Idaho, were moving into the northeast part of the state. Other wolves were occasionally drifting down from the north. They decided, we need to have a plan to, you know, like, how do we manage these guys? When do they get off the state and endangered species list? And yet, when the plan came out, they put up huge roadblocks for wolves being moved into the Olympics. You know, it's going to be hard for them to get here on their own. So it's been frustrating. I certainly kind of want to keep the fire burning in this book and you know, in various articles and talks I give. The general management plan, the Parks in 2008 general management plan, listed in an appendix of future wildlife, you know, future biological plans, that a wolf recovery plan for the park was near the top of their list. And I'm hoping to make sure that that happens, that that plan gets done. And it's like getting rid of the Snake River dams. It makes so much sense. It's like restoring the Elwha. It's like, why not? What could possibly be wrong with this picture? And yet, some stubborn local opposition on the west end of the Olympic Peninsula, and some State Department Fish and Wildlife guys who don't particularly think it's a good idea. They don't want the problems.
Max Planck paraphrased, science changes one funeral at a time.
That's good.
Yeah, right. The Olympic National Park and the Olympic Peninsula is quintessentially Cascadian.
Absolutely.
It really is so much about this.
I think kind of heart and soul of Cascadia.
The heart and soul of it.
Yeah, I think so. I do.
Why is that?
Because so much of what was originally here was able to survive. One of the great attractions of bioregional thinking is the fact that these areas came to us through millions of years of evolution, and we've got to keep the components together. You know, Aldo Leopold said, you know, first rule of intelligent thinking is saving all the cogs and wheels. And here on the peninsula, we've got them all, almost all. The wolf is still missing. We're having some trouble with spotted owls now. But as the Olympics during the great ice age advance of the ice sheet glaciers, the Olympics was key to repopulating this entire area. I think with the coming changes of both the human impact and global warming impacts, that the Olympic Peninsula could be as important to future evolution of this place as it has been in the past.
So the smart guy decides he's going to live here.
The dumb would-be poet decided this is a cool spot.
What is it about Cascadia that makes it a unique place? What is it about the spirit of this place that makes it unique?
This incredible connection between landscape and human culture. You know, we didn't import European farming methods. We didn't import heavy duty manufacturing. We didn't pollute all the rivers. We didn't destroy all the forests, because it was to our advantage for these natural systems to continue. I mean, we did our best blundering around to wipe some of them out, but this incredible connection between landscape and human culture, both how we make our living and how we focus our art and how we develop a spiritual consciousness of what it means to be a human in the universe, directly through experiencing of these natural systems and the dignity, the reverence, the spiritual presence of trees and animals around us.
That almost sounds like a poem in itself. I was going to ask you.
Give me that.
Well, we'll have a transcription for you. Is there a poem that might serve as giving us a sense of what you just said?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to read this poem. It's a poem that I think has a bit of maybe reverence in it, tying into perhaps one of the oldest religions of humankind, bear worship. Old Paleolithic tradition. And this is a poem that comes from the mountains. Late afternoon, upper Duckabush, Lakes Country, reflecting back on the previous evening and then coming back. It's called A Mountain Blessing. Across the high basin, green sloping meadows and bands of rock drop steeply to a cobalt lake. Slow metallic trickles ring from withering snowbanks. Scraps of cloud dissipate, and the mountain world is numinous with light. Last night, four bare, small shadows darker than the shadowed cliffs emerged and prowled the ledges and skirts of meadow, hungry for summer sweet berries. We watched as they moved easily across cliff face and hanging meadow. The she-bear and her cub descended a wall of broken rock on invisible steps. Another stemmed a smooth, water-worn gully to a hidden pocket meadow and disappeared. We stayed until cold and coming darkness sent us back over rocks and hummocks to camp. Now, as afternoon shadows cross the slope and breezes ruffle the lake, I listen for that ceramic clack of stone on stone and watch for those deepest of shadows to reemerge from shrubby cloisters of trees. I wait, attentive and hopeful as a supplicant, for that blessing of the wild to wash over me like a fine north wind and deepen my winter dreams.
Fantastic.
Good. Hope that false start didn't screw things up.
Quick edit. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you. This was fun. Time flew by.